You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's show, Your Ultimate Life, the show dedicated to just helping you create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy by serving with your natural gifts and things you love to do. I'm really excited about a guest I have today. Miriam, welcome to the show. Grünhaus. I love that name, and I like saying it, Miriam Grünhaus. Yeah, am I saying it wrong?
No, you're saying it right.
Yay. Well, when you got a name like Kellen Flukiger, you sort of pay attention to that stuff.
That's right.
So welcome to the show today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Thank you. So let me ask you a weird question. What made you want to come on this show?
To have another hour with you.
Oh.
I'm serious. I cannot lie.
Okay. You can tell me more about that in a minute. But I noticed that you have Heal with Gold. And obviously people are going to, you know, want to know about that. Like, I have a broken tooth and I'm going to go get a gold crown on it, right? My dentist was making sure that I was going to get a gold one and not a porcelain crown because of they last longer and stuff like that. But I have an idea that that isn't the kind of healing with gold that you're talking about. So tell me a little bit about healing with gold.
Absolutely. Heal with gold comes from the Japanese art of kintsugi. In Japan, when pottery breaks, they don't throw the pottery out. They have a process to mend it back together with a lacquer called urushi, which comes from a tree. And then they highlight the breaks with gold. And the concept is that we, learn from the art that we shouldn't be ashamed of our scars. Because in kintsugi, the piece becomes stronger after it's fixed in this manner and becomes more valuable and very unique. I mean, you can buy a piece of pottery for $5 in a garage sale, and it's not worthless, right? It's garbage for somebody. But after it's fixed the proper way in the kintsugi way, it could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on how many breaks there are. So that teaches us that we can mend ourselves, put our pieces back together after we go through adversity, after we go through challenges in life. And we should feel proud of our scars. We should be proud of our story, of what happened to us. We shouldn't hide it. We should use it to show other people that we did the work, that we mended, that there is hope, and teach each other and guide each other to heal ourselves. So the Healing with Gold comes from the kintsugi. It's the name of my book. I actually interviewed women for about 3 years, women who are thrivers, women who went through terrible, terrible tragedies, but they consider themselves thrivers and joyful and active and participants in the community. So I wanted to ask them, first of all, what had happened to them and then how they healed. I wanted to know if this was something that was innate. Is it a person that just strong, you're born this way, that you have this resilience in yourself? Or is it a process that can be learned and can be taught, therefore, right? And it was amazing. It was an amazing 3-year interview. It was at times difficult. It was before I was doing videos. So I would speak to the people. I would record their story. And then I would re-listen, write their story as if I was them. So I was really embodying their experience. And then my second blog would be the lessons that I learned from that person. And that was an amazing process because, first of all, as an empath, I really felt what they were going through. At times it was really hard. And then I had to introspect and see what can I learn from this person. And after all of these years that I was doing that, I started noticing that the top 10 things that these women had done between, that it was in common between all of them. And it didn't matter their ethnicity, their age. It didn't matter what had broken them, but they were doing the same activities in essence to heal and become thrivers. So I wrote the book, Heal with Gold. I started doing the show on video as opposed to blog writing. And it has been an incredible, you know, path, an incredible journey for me. First of all, it helped me put my pieces together. But more than anything, it created purpose for my life. I definitely see my life as the before, my big adversity, and then my journey to find what it means to heal and then be able to teach other people and coach other people to do it. But the interesting part is that I am not a full-time coach and teacher and speaker and author. I'm also a fashion designer. And what I did with my fashion was to embed the whole methodology of Kintsugi. So the majority of my collection has the golds or has stitching with gold thread. And the reason I did it is because when we get dressed, it empowers us, you know, it puts us in the mood of that thing. That's why t-shirts with words sell so well, because we embody the message of what we're wearing. So I put that in my collection. My tags explain what we do and what's our mission and purpose. And it's an interesting combination, because the world of fashion sometimes can be seen as shallow, let's put it this way. But here we created something completely different, that it's full of meaning, full of depth, and that's what I'm doing.
So I didn't want to stop you, but there were at least seven or eight things that I wanted to get into, and I hope that I remember most of them as we go through. The first question that popped in my mind was, you started with a premise, and the premise was, maybe in many societies, certainly in Western society, we're taught to hide or be ashamed of our imperfections and brokenness. It used to be horribly shameful if someone was a divorced or a child that was born out of wedlock, which wasn't their fault. And there was all this stuff upon things that happened to people. And the premise of this thing is, broken isn't bad, it's just broken. And then, if you want to, go find the right glue. The
Urushi.
Urushi. So if you go find the right glue, you can make it even stronger. And on top of that, you celebrate or decorate that broken vein with gold on top of the glue. So I just wanted to dig into that for a minute, because that is such a departure from hiding, shame, and all the rest. So talk more about this idea that those about being stronger and about the decoration of gold.
Sure. So we all think that we are the only ones. You know, our situation is the worst. Our situation is the most embarrassing. We don't want to shame relatives or other people. We don't want to come out and tell our story. And we that shame, that hiding is probably the worst part of the brokenness. Because when we open up and we share it with people, we see that everybody is going through something. We're all full of wisdom and support for one another. And if we just did that, we wouldn't be so alone in this journey, and the journey would be so much better. I think that a lot of people forget there is no destination. There isn't. It's all just journey. And the journey is all about breaking and fixing, breaking and fixing. That is what life is all about. The breaks, if they're mended properly, we grow from them. We become a better version of ourselves. So the more breaks we have, it's the more opportunities that we have to become somebody more special, wiser, and have gifts to give to the world. So that is where the gold comes in. The gold is really the purpose within the pain, the purpose within the brokenness. When we realize that whatever we're here for, it is goes hand in hand with whatever broke us. And we start seeing that the brokenness, it is exactly what we need to shine. It is exactly what we need to be here doing. Then we understand the gold and we understand why we broke and what's our purpose in life. All of the women, without exception, that I have interviewed, and I interviewed a lot of women, they ended up doing things to help the world in the area that they were broken. If they were, if it was sexually, if they were sexually abused, if they were in terrible relationships, like they were beaten, there were horrible things. They did that. They worked in that area. There was one woman that I interviewed, and at 6 years old, she was hit by a car and she lost her leg. And today she's an attorney and she gives prosthetics in third world countries. So she told me, actually, this is such an incredible statement. She said, Miriam, I want to find the young man that hit me, because he went to jail and he was 18 and he was driving an ice cream truck. He said, I want, my next goal is to find him and tell him that I'm not upset, but that he gave my life purpose and meaning, and that I would have never had the kind of life that I have if this hadn't happened. It is such a level of understanding what is my purpose. And if this is my purpose, this bad thing, which is, I always say, it's not bad, it's hard. But this hard thing that happened to me had to happen, because otherwise I would never find my way in a way that gives me so much purpose and meaning. So it's fascinating.
I love that. I really, really do, because what you've done is you've said, you've boldly declared that your purpose can be derived from your pain. Your purpose comes out and flows out of that if you let it. Mm-hmm. And I, like you, I'm sure you do, see lots of people whose hardship, circumstances, the things that happen to them, destroy them, and they don't make purpose out of that, and they end up bitter and complaining and resentful and full of vengeance and all that sort of negativity. And if you contrast a life lived like that to a life where someone has gone through an internal kintsugi process to repair and then bring light from the gold from that circumstance, mm-hmm. What a huge difference. What made you decide to write this, to do this research and write this book?
I wanted to heal myself, and I love to learn. I love to talk to people that did whatever it is that I want to do. They did it before me, so why not pick their brain? So I wanted to understand what was the process and if I could do the same thing. Now, I consider myself resilient by nature and strong. I have grit, I have tenacity, I'm strong. But I was so broken at that time in my life that I don't think that I could have achieved the word healing is a complicated word. I'd like to say this integration, you know, I don't think I would have reached this integration that I have today if I hadn't learned from the people who had done it. And one thing was very important, because I think that we all feel victims at some point in our lives. And it's normal. At some point, you know, immediately when it breaks, you have that victim feeling. But it's a disempowering feeling. Feeling a victim, you are giving the power to somebody else to come into your life and fix it for you. And it didn't sit well with me, because I didn't want to give this power to somebody else, because then I could be sitting and waiting forever. I don't know when this person is coming to help me. when is this person coming to save me? When is
if or when? I mean, who knows, right? Well,
maybe never. So then I'm giving my power away to something imaginary, but I can rewrite it and I can say, no, I'm gonna do this myself. I'm going to fix myself. I'm going to heal myself. I'm going to become Kintsugi. And so that was the process. And I think it's very important for people to understand that the entire art is the path for healing. I mean, there is never only one path, but whoever connects with the message, they will understand the path. And it starts with brokenness. And I always say, and I say to my coaching clients, take a ceramic and throw it, break it. It is a very cathartic feeling to break it. And then go and collect the pieces. Go pick them up from the floor. Because that's the first of all, you're going to grieve. Something happened in your life. You're entitled to grieve. You're entitled to feel all the feelings. And then you have to pick up. Then you go into action. Then there is something to do. It's not to wait passively for somebody to come help you, but it is you pick up your pieces. Then you have to assess the pieces. You have to, it's a puzzle. Now you need to put it back together. You need to find where do they belong. And some pieces have broken and so many pieces became sand. You won't find it. So then you're going to have to put a big blob of gold or a gem to fill it up, and you're going to reinvent yourself. But the process of Kintsugi is fascinating, and it really explains what we need to do to put ourselves back together. I'm going to share with you something very interesting. I wanted to meet with a Kintsugi master, and I wanted to learn the Japanese art, the art itself. So I find a Japanese Kintsugi master in New York. And I managed to get in touch with him. And I tell him, I want to come and spend a week with you and have some Kintsugi. And he tells me, Miriam, I'm very sorry. I can't do that. You need to come once a week for 2 months. And I'm telling him, I can't travel from Florida once a week for 2 months to learn how to do Kintsugi. Like, can you just teach me? And he said, Miriam, part of the Kintsugi process is to do nothing and to wait for the pottery to really glue and set in its way and be firm. So there is a lot of waiting in between. It's a very lengthy process. And when he told me that, it hit me. So much of the healing process, it's just waiting for our new habits to become habits. It is for our behaviors, learning new behaviors. You have to keep doing, and you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to do it again. And you have to wait until you suddenly feel depletion and you say, wow, you know, the patience that it took was part of the process of healing and the process of Kintsugi.
I just absolutely love that, because we live in a world right now that's download and double click. You know, we expect everything to be solved in the length of a TV sitcom. And it isn't, and it doesn't. And so for him to wisely tell you, you know, I know you'd like the guy said, you know, there's no royal road to geometry to the king, right? You can't do this. It takes however long it takes, and you got to do all the stuff. And as you're describing that, I'm having a reaction of thinking about the setbacks, the do-overs, you know, the time it takes, the doubts where you think, you know, this isn't the right thing or it isn't going to work, whatever that means, and doing that. And I love the fact that you said sometimes it's broken into sand and you just have to figure out how to plug the hole with a new thing instead of trying to recreate it.
Yeah.
So when you found yourself, what, if you don't mind sharing, what caused you to be broken enough to say, I need to reinvent? I love the fact you use the word reinvent. Well, I need to reinvent myself. What happened?
Okay, so the whole story I haven't yet shared publicly. I will give you an insight, but I haven't shared because the story is not only mine. And I have struggled a long time on how to bring it to the world. And I hope that in a year I will, because I'm writing a second book. And I believe it's going to come out there. But so that everybody understands, it was a fault line. It was in the family. It was a break in the family, a disconnect. And I really felt my whole life that as a wife and a mother, I was a vase. I considered myself, if I would look at a product, an element, right? What am I? I would say I'm a vase. And why would I describe myself this way? Is because I felt a vase is a container that holds the flowers, right? It has water, so it feeds the flowers for them to flourish. So I, my job was to be this container and provide for my family everything that they needed. So when there was this break, I felt that my whole being, my whole reason for being didn't exist anymore. Like my bowl, my vase fell to the ground and broke literally. And I couldn't.
And all the water spilled out, right?
Yeah, and that the flowers, and there was this disconnect. And all I wanted to do was to reconnect. And it took me a very long time to understand that my job was not to reconnect what I thought was, but to reconnect myself with myself and understand what really my purpose is, and that sometimes things don't look the way we want it to look, the way we dream it's going to be. It's not necessarily the way that it needs to be, and that's okay. And how can I come out of this without shame? Because I felt so much shame because I just couldn't be the one thing that I was meant to be in this world. How can I come out to the world and say, I failed? I failed in the most important job that I was ever given. Until you recognize maybe this is not exactly the purpose and that you came here for. Maybe it's part of your journey, but that maybe that's not it. And maybe you didn't do anything wrong. So it's a very complicated, because it was tied in to everything that I expected of myself. And sometimes we have to revisit those expectations and love ourselves a little bit more and treat ourselves with kindness. And just like we would tell a friend, that's okay. You know, you're going to get over this. You're going to put yourself back together. Things are going to get better. But sometimes we're the hardest critic on to ourselves, and we don't give each other this grace and this kindness. You know, we just want everything to be perfect.
I think we're always, I don't know always, but nearly always our own worst critic. And in some of the, in what you're saying, one of the things I'm hearing is there comes, if we allow it, there comes a time when we discover that our view of what should be is not right. It's not consistent with our true opportunity and capability. Like your choice to go through this recreation process and then to share it and write these books and do this work that you're doing, I believe, without even knowing details, I believe that it has allowed you to add more good and more light to the world, help more people than it could have been or would have been if things had worked out the way you had imagined. Am I out to lunch there, or is that true?
No. Oh, my God. You are so right. So first of all, I consider myself quite an introvert. For me, you know, I do speaking engagements. I go to places where I'm in front of a lot of people, but it's harder for me because I'm more of an introvert. Before this whole thing happened, I used to work in an office. I did corporate work. I worked with pharmaceutical companies, with lawyers, you know. So it was very much one-on-one. I used to create programs, whatever. And I wasn't so much in front. I didn't have the opportunity to inspire people because I was sitting in my office the whole day. Nobody knew what I was doing and what I had to share with the world. When this whole thing happened, my decision to change careers, because I used to do ethics and compliance. I mean, I was not anywhere near fashion. And I left the world of ethics and compliance and teaching that it's good for business to be ethical to become in fashion. I'm not even a fashionista. But the reason I changed was because my new business was my drug. I 100% wanted to bury myself into a business that I knew nothing about because I love to work. I am a workaholic, but I enjoy working. I enjoy the challenge. I enjoy creating new things. And I said, great, I am so dead inside. I'm going to change careers to something I know nothing about. And I'm going to have so much to learn and to create that I'm not going to think about my problems. And so people sometimes don't realize that there are different types of drugs that may seem like they are the healthy kind, but they're not the healthy kind, because I was working 16, 18 hours a day, and that was not a healthy thing to do. And I was running away. And I had to wake up and say, no, you know, I need to stop this. I continued the business, and I continued working hard. But I made a conscious decision to spend a lot of time learning about myself, coming back to myself, and fixing myself.
So I want to ask a question. Like, so you had something traumatic happen. You ran away from it, burying yourself in a new business, trying to ease the pain. And some people do that with drugs and alcohol and gambling. And you did it with building a new business that took all of your time and was all consuming. And then you said, I made a conscious choice to go do the work. And one of the things I say is, well, nobody falls up the mountain. So you chose to climb this ladder or this mountain of insight, of development, of reinvention, and then tie it to this glorious process of recreation. Talk a little bit about the personal work that you did that is ties into this thing. So you decided to do the book and what else? Like, what, after you said, I'm not going to work 20 hours a day or 18 or whatever, I have to deal with this, not hide from it. Yes. Talk about that pivot where you said, I'm going to deal with it, not hide from it.
Yes. So first of all, I have to tell you a little story on how I realized that I needed to go through my pain and not around my pain.
Okay.
So one day, my sofa and love seat, they were facing each other. My husband and I were sitting across from each other. And Kellen, if I'm telling you that day, I understood all the advertisements for Russian medicine, because we couldn't move. Our hands felt like they weighed a ton. We were sitting on the couch. I remember both of us had tears streaming down our face, and the tears were so hot, they felt like they were burning our face. And we couldn't move. We were glued to the sofa, but in such despair. And we were quiet, crying quietly. And I said to my husband, and this was something, I don't know why this happened, but it just came out. I said to my husband, let's go to the beach. So we go to the beach, and we're not speaking much on the way, and we park the car and we go to the beach. And I just said the following. I said, I want to do a ceremony of goodbyes. I want to make a ceremony. I have goosebumps because this happened exactly like that. I said, I want to say goodbye to the dreams there are not to be, and goodbye to the pain that I felt at that moment, and goodbye to the disappointments. So I said to him, let's take shells from the ground and just whisper to the shells what this shell represents. And I would say, you're the disappointment that I'm not going to have my biggest dream. I'm another one. I would say, you're the disappointment at family members that didn't stand up for me, didn't speak up for me. This is the embarrassment that I have. And we started throwing those shells to the ocean. And we did that a lot. There was a lot of pain to throw out. There was a lot to take it off our hearts because it was so heavy. So after both of us finished doing that, I said to my husband, let's walk a little bit. And up until that moment when we were walking, it was so hard. You know, we were even saying, oh, now I get the caricatures of the depression medicines, that the person is walking like this, because that's, we couldn't even stand straight. After we did the ceremony, we were walking, and I told my husband, I said, I believe we have been praying for the wrong thing. I believe that we have been praying to resolve our problems and to go around and to fix it. We were praying for a solution, but I don't think that we're going to get that. I think that the point is that we need to go through the pain. We can't take, you know, other turns and go around it and fake it like it didn't happen. We need to go and we need to feel the pain. We need to go through it and feel all the feels and all the disappointments. We need to go through it because then maybe we're going to reach the other side. Helen, after I told him that, it was like there was a wind behind our backs and we started walking straighter, faster, and we're both looking at each other and we said, we couldn't walk like that a minute ago. And I said to him, because I think what I said is true. And I think that God is saying, okay, took you some time, but you got there. You are going to have to go through it. And that was the moment that I said, now I need to do this reconstruction and I need this reinvention and I need to understand, who am I? And what was I supposed to be? What I thought I was supposed to be? Maybe it's supposed to be something else. And that was the birth of me trying to learn. And I started reading a lot, watching lots of videos. And a lot of the videos were not popular. They were not from gurus, but it was a lot of people sharing their own personal experience, how they got through the problems that they had to go through. I looked a lot at monasteries, being in silence, what it means to be in silence. And I started implementing a whole morning routine of what I would do. So I had like for half an hour, it was my time. And if I couldn't afford it, I had to wake up earlier. Like if I was very busy with meetings, I would have to wake up earlier because it was a non-negotiable. I needed that half an hour, and I did a lot of writing, and I did a lot of dreaming on paper, and I did a lot of self-assessment, but with kindness, always with kindness, you know, and saying, okay, I screw up with that. Okay, I did, but, you know, what can I learn from it? How can I become better? And implementing action. I'm very, and this is also how I coach. I'm a very action taking kind of a coach. Like I give homework, a lot of homework. And I did that to myself. You know, I told myself, you need to accomplish this. You have until this time to accomplish this. Let's try. If you don't manage, we're going to figure out a different plan. We're going to figure out a different avenue. But with action, I felt that I was empowered and I had control over my life. And yeah, I had to feel and I had to cry and I had to go through it. And then I was able to be a light to other people and I was able to share my story and I was able to share what I learned with people. And then people start telling me, wow, this is so inspiring. This helped me in this way, in that way. And that is the goal. That is the goal. When somebody tells you that your experience changed their lives for the better, that's the goal. I mean, that
yeah,
is
absolutely. What do you think? Why do you think it's true? You said something a minute ago that I really like and I believe is true. You said it's way more powerful. And I'm saying not exactly what you said, but it's way more powerful or way better to hear people, their stories, what they've been through and to relate to them than it is to get advice or be told what to do. You said the videos you watch were about other people going through stories and why do you suppose it's so much more effective to hear the story of someone, than it is to be given the answer, even if the answer's right.
I think that part of the story is getting it wrong a lot of the time. That is part of the person's story. And that not only makes it, it validates that you're just in a, you're going to make mistakes. But look at these people. They made 100 mistakes and then they found a way each to grow from the experience. It was very real. It was somebody talking at me, but it was with me. It was somebody, you know what the difference? I think Brené Brown has a video, like a caricature also, that she explains the difference between an empathy and sympathy. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that sympathy is if you fell into a big, deep hole in a well, and sympathy, somebody comes and peeks from the well and says, oh, I'm so sorry for you. I wish I could help you. I don't have how to get you out. But, let me see what I can do. But an empath is going to go down to the well with you and sit with you. And I feel that the videos that I was watching and the books that I was reading, they were empaths. You know, I felt that I went into the hole with them and they went into the hole with me. And suddenly we're not alone. It wasn't somebody telling me, oh, do this, do that. But it was the feeling together. Of the experience together with them. And I cried a lot for them. I watched the video of a woman. She was raped when she was traveling. And I mean, I cried throughout her story, her video, but then I cried for days for her. And that grieving, sometimes it's easier to cry for somebody else, you know, like, oh, I can cry a little bit for you. You know, that didn't happen to me. I can cry a little bit for you. And then I'm fine. Because it's not my problem, it's your problem. But it opens up the door for you to then cry for yourself, especially somebody like me, because I am strong. So at a lot of the time of my journey, I wasn't allowing myself to cry and feel because, no, I'm strong. You know, I can fix this. I'm a fixer. I'm the glue. But once I cried for them, I said, well, I can cry for them. I can cry for myself. I can go through my process. I can do the same kind of deep looking inside me and see how I can put my pieces back together.
You know, one of the things you've said that I just love and I feel, too, that is more and more missing in our current way of life, in our current polarization of society and opinions and everything else, is just the true feeling of being heard, not judged, not fixed, but just being heard. And when you said, you know, the empath jumps down in the well to be with you, I just thought of the pure joy and connection of being heard. I guess there's two parts to this question, and maybe the first one doesn't matter. The first part was, why do you suppose it's so hard to get heard? And more importantly, what can we do to help allow, to invite people to be heard? They're not alone, you know, that kind of work. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
I think that we live in a society that, like you said, everything needs to be fast. Everything needs to be in a timeline. And everything needs to look good because of social media. You need to present a life that it's always marvelous. Everything is perfect. And you just need to be validated. People want to fix you. People want to tell you what to do because they did it or they heard or their grandmother did it. So they know better. And you don't want the fixing yet. In Kintsugi, it takes a long time for the part where you start putting the pieces back together. You know, when you do the art of Kintsugi and you find and you collect all the pieces and you find the puzzle. So first of all, it's a puzzle. You need to figure it out. That is a lengthy process. Once you figure out where everything goes, you need to sand down every surface because in order to glue them, they need to be very smooth in order for the joint to join the parts, right? The joinery. And So that is a process that it takes time. We don't need sometimes to be fixed right away. Sometimes we need to learn, where do my pieces go? What part of my life I want to remain? What part needs to go and needs to be replaced with something else? And then how can I fine tune it? How can I make it better? Just like the sanding of the pieces, in order to glue it back together, we need to make adjustments in our lives. So the process is intense before. And here, everybody wants to fix you quickly. And no, the process is lengthy, is slow, and you just want somebody to listen to and say, I understand you're going through a very hard time right now, and I'm here for thick and thin. You can cry to me as often as you can. I'm here to hold your hand. You're not alone.
I'd like you to take a minute now, or a couple of minutes or whatever. So you've written a book. You have another book coming. You still run a fashion business, and now you're coaching. So I want you to tell everybody about what you do. Like, who comes to you? How do you help them? What do you do? How do you add good to the world? Tell us all about that.
So I take people in a process of kintsugi of their lives, accepting what happened, going through the break, experiencing the break, and being able to feel that grief, unjudged, without hurry, but at the same time, it's not forever. The kintsugi process is, yes, it's broken, but you're going to fix it. So then we go through a very specific process in which we start taking action, and it emulates the kintsugi process. I don't always say, oh, now we're polishing, now we're gluing. I don't necessarily do that, but if the person wants to pay attention, they will pay attention, and they will see that there's an order to the process. And then until we find the purpose in life, and we find goodness and find charity, we find good things to do in life, how we're going to contribute to the world with whatever broke you. And then people can either continue, deal with something else, deal with different traumas, or they go on to feel good and strong, and they'll come back when they are facing another big challenge. But what happens to the people is that while they're doing this process, they're really learning to be more resilient. So the goal is that they're going to be able to take care of a lot of small breaks that are going to happen in their lives on their own. I'm always here. The way I coach also, people are able to text me during the week, because I'm a big believer. If I'm telling you to take action, I need to see that you are taking this action. So they actually have to report to me that the homework is being done. There is a lot of writing. There is reading. I'm not going to lie, it's intense. But whoever joins the process, they don't stay for a million years. It's not like therapy that you need to stay with me and just talk about the other problem, other problem. I'm teaching you to be more resilient and strong and be able to deal with life challenges by yourself. I want to mention one thing. I interviewed one woman who I am so honored that I can call her a friend. She had lots of different adversities, like and very difficult, very, very bad things. And I said to her, I would love to interview you. And she said, sure. And she tells me, which adversity would you want me to talk about? Because she had so many. And I said to her, I want to talk about your son's suicide. Her son committed suicide when he was 19. He had bipolar and Asperger's. And she told me, you know, everybody asked me, because she's very open about his suicide. And she said, everybody asks me about the suicide, but people don't understand that I raised a mentally ill child since he was a baby. Like he asked to die when he was 5 years old. So this child wanted to die all along. She said it wasn't so much the death that was the difficult part. It was raising him, trying to make him happy and joyous. I asked her the following question. I said, Aliza, people tell each other that God gives us what we can handle. And I hate it. I hate that. Because, no, I can't handle. I couldn't handle. when I was broken, I could not handle. And I hate it when people told me, well, God gave you what God can handle. I could not handle it. I felt broken. I felt in complete despair, and I didn't feel like I could handle it. So I asked her, do you believe those words? And she said, absolutely not. And I said, explain it to me. She said, whatever you can handle is part of you. We are here in this world to grow. You're not here to stay in the same place. It's always going to get harder. It's always going to go out of you because you're supposed to grow, and that experience then becomes part of you. But that growth is painful. So you weren't born with the ability to withstand it. That's the work that you need to do. Some will withstand it and some will not withstand it. And that's the hard work. So God is always giving us just a little bit outside of what we can handle. And we need to be prepared to expand it. We need to be prepared. And sometimes it breaks more in order for it to expand, to become bigger. So now you can swallow that experience and become part of who you are, so you can then give out more and more to the world. And I think that when she told me that, it helped me accept that anger that I felt. Because you see how the perspective changed? I was angry with God for giving me something that I couldn't handle. And everybody's telling me, that, oh, he only gives you what you can handle. Suddenly I said, oh, he's perfecting me. He's making me better. It was a completely change of perspective in the whole situation.
I love that. And I don't, you know, define how we handle it any way that it needs to be, but there's no question. We are here to learn and grow, and the learn and growth process is painful, difficult, and involves bruised knees, broken bones, and broken hearts often. And that process is the process of refinement, because if all that happened is we ended up having everything that we could handle ourselves, then there's no growth there because we've already got that capacity. And so it's the need to expand capacity. So tell me what we've just got a couple minutes left. Tell me what the next 6 months or year brings for you. How do you know? I want to ask a different question. You're still doing fashion and you have this coaching. How do you mix those two? Is one going down and up? Do you plan on continuing both of them for a long time? Tell me how that works together.
Okay. So I'm planning to continue that for now. And I'm not going to lie to you. I don't feel that I'm a fashion designer. I am not a person, a lover of fashion. I definitely don't belong in the world of fashion. And when it comes to energy, and I feel I'm very in tune with my energy, the business of fashion a little bit drains me, as opposed to the coaching business and the speaking world and writing world, that energizes me. So the long-term goal will be maybe to sell or to find somebody to manage the fashion part so I can focus on the coaching and the speaking and the writing. Maybe keep them still together, but have somebody else handle that part. We're a very, very small company. And another one of my challenges is that my husband had 2 strokes in the last 3 years. So he doesn't work anymore. He used to be my partner in the business. And so now I don't have that support. So I need to figure out how I am going to create more cash flow, create more money, so I could do more good things with that money and create the life that I really want to live. I've done a lot of changes in my life. One of them was to sell my forever home. I had a very big home, beautiful, that I designed it, with a very big pool, very big backyard. And I had a lot of dreams attached to that home. And I decided that it's time to say goodbye to that dream. That was part of my growth, that I don't need to be attached to that. And instead, we bought a smaller place that I was able to buy without a mortgage, reduce my monthly expenses, so I can slowly build the kind of life that I really want to lead, which is more helping people in a more hands-on way.
So as a final thing, tell everybody where they can find you. People that want to follow your work, find your book, where can we find you?
Sure. So the clothing company, the website is Mika Fashion, and it spells M-I-K-A-H, fashion. And if you want to know what that means, Mika in Hebrew means who is like God. And the reason was because I never wanted to be conceited that I created this. I didn't create anything. I'm just a vessel that shares it with the world. So I didn't want my name. I wanted just something that would remind me where the creativity comes from. So that's MikaFashion.com. The book is Heal with Gold. You can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble online. For coaching, you can go to HealWithGold.com. The site is not complete, but you have my email there. Or on the Mika Fashion, you can email me from the Mika Fashion. On Instagram, it's Mika Fashion. YouTube is Mika Fashion. Facebook is Mika Fashion. So it's easy.
Thank you. I want to thank you for being with us today. Thank you for your story. Thank you for your heart, your openness, and thank you for all the ways you're committed to add good to the world.
My pleasure. Can I just say one more thing?
Please do.
I started telling you that I'm here because I wanted to spend an hour with you. And you said we're going to talk about it. I just want to say something. It is such a pleasure to be in your presence because you are so kintsugi. And I think that once you are a kintsugi person, you see other kintsugi people and there is a sisterhood and a brotherhood, even if they don't recognize it. But the person who knows kintsugi can spot another kintsugi. And that is why I wanted to be in your presence, in your energy, and in your gold. And I wanted to thank you for this hour.
You're welcome. You're absolutely welcome. So I want to encourage listeners here, please take time to listen again and examine in your own life where things are broken. Where are they broken? And don't despair. That brokenness is the path to growth. The glue to put you back together is available. And the gold that you have to offer the world because of that brokenness will be your greatest gift and your greatest joy. And as you grab that and build with it, you'll be able to move forward and create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.